You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello, welcome to another Locked On Wolves podcast. I've been away. I've been on hiatus a little bit. I had a lot of work commitments. A lot of work commitments with the March Madness. I was lucky enough to get press credentials for the Final Four and the championship, so I've been working a lot leading up to that over the weekend, and I just finished with that. I'm just driving home on the long trek home. So Seth Topol, a longtime friend of the show, host of The Scoop, director of sports in the northern regions, basically. He has been nice enough to record while I'm on the road. He is my man in the studio, and he's going to be helping me decipher some of the tough-hitting topics of the Timberwolves season, because we're going to look at the entire season set.
Thank you for having me on, as always, Colton. I'm glad that one of us at least was able to get credentials to go to the Final Four, because it sounded like it was a lot of fun, but
We are still hashing it out with the NCAA about how Seth does not get credentials for the Final Four. This is not over, my friend.
Well,
lawsuits and counter lawsuits, I'm sure.
Yeah, my legal team is currently preparing their case.
Courtroom Brown is on it. But yeah, so I brought it because here's the thing is you gotta know two things about the relationship for Seth and I. First of all, whenever the other person knows that they need solid content for their show, the one person gets a call from the other.
Oh, for sure.
We go on a show. The second thing is that I know that there's nobody who's going to be able to be both just disgruntled and pessimistic and upset about the Timberwolves, as well as putting a fun content twist on it, like you are going to be able to, Seth, with what we're going to have to tackle. And we're going to try and recap the entire season right here.
I am very disgruntled is a perfect word, but I am what we call a happy disgruntled. So I
exactly.
I'm like Dalen Brennan's dad in Step Brothers at the Christmas dinner table, where he's like, you know what I got for Christmas, kids? A crushed soul.
Fantastic reference.
That's
to
me.
Start out this show.
Oh yeah,
I love it. I love it. You're every alcoholic in a TV series. That's kind of happy, but at the same time, it's sad that he's at the bar every episode. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. So we're already getting off track. Seth, enjoy the show. We're going to talk about the Timberwolves season. I'm going to be honest with you. I've been thinking about it because you know this show. If you're on a team's beat, right, and you're on a couple different teams. So you know that this show is coming. You know it from a mile away. You know it from a couple weeks away. And you don't start thinking about it until maybe a month out or 2 weeks out. But you know this show is coming. You know this article is coming, whatever. And as I've been thinking about it, I'm not exactly sure how to walk away from this season. And I have a few ideas, but I wanted to get your take on this first. Is like, this has got to be one of the top five most confusing seasons if you're looking at it as a whole for Timberwolves fans, just because you've got to be disappointed with how everything shook out. But at the same time, you can also say that injuries played maybe the biggest role of all for this team over the course of the season. Also, Towns really seemed to find his superstar self. And I can't be super mad at a season where Towns really unlocked himself.
Yeah, that's very well put, because while there were a tremendous amount of negatives and things that stayed the same, it's like the quote, the more things change, the more they stay the same. There were a lot of things with this Timberwolves team that didn't change. The lack of defense, the lack of being able to really get anybody to step up and assist Karl-Anthony Towns on a nightly basis as a dynamic scorer. So that kind of stuff just continues to be a problem that this Wolves team has yet to be able to solve. But on the other side of the coin, one of the most important parts of the season after the Jimmy Butler situation was resolved was, what is Karl Anthony Towns going to do? Is he going to step up his game and take it to another level? And we can at least, whatever this season has been, we can at least say that he did that. I mean, you look at the numbers that Towns is putting up on a nightly basis. He's averaging 24 points, 12 rebounds a game, but you can split that up and you can look at basically the first half of the season and the second half of the season. Now, post All-Star game, he is averaging 28 points a game and 13.4 rebounds per game. He's shooting just under 43% from three, is shooting 53% from the field overall, and 81% from the line in that time frame. So he is joining rare territory as to the numbers that he's putting up. So you want to say maybe this season was a failure overall, which it probably is safe to say that it was, but the Timberwolves have definitely gotten some answers as to how their franchise player is going to be handling it going forward, and it certainly looks like he is going to step up and be the one to take a lot of the load. Now the question becomes, who else is going to join him?
Yeah, and that seems to be the question that the Timberwolves have been trying to answer the last couple of years and still don't have a solid answer to. I took the liberty of breaking this season up, and we'll see if you agree or if you want to make modifications, adjustments, tweaks, whatever we got to do. But for me personally, I broke this season up into three quadrants, and I labeled them. And I think once I share with the labels, you'll know exactly which parts of the season I'm talking about. But I labeled them the Jimmy Butler hangover, the Derrick Rose renaissance, and then Towns mania.
Yeah,
is that fair?
I think that's a pretty good spot to go with all of those. I think there's definitely a range that you can point to for each of them. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Jimmy Butler hangover, I feel like you can categorize that from like July or even June all the way till when he gets traded. I mean, Derrick Rose's renaissance, I would put a few weeks before that trade to right about the end of December, and then from December on, it's Towns mania. And I know that he's kind of finishing the season out, kind of in cruise control, and I guess you could technically, the last week, the last like 10 games, you could put this separate area of just sad, but I'm not going to do that just because I don't want to.
That's fair.
And so that's the way I'm looking at these, and I wanted to attack a couple of these things. First of all, with the Jimmy Butler hangover, specifically, was there a team in the NBA that, I mean, maybe just the 76ers have changed more than the Timberwolves? The 76ers set a franchise record with 26 different players getting taking the court for them this season. And so that's a pretty crazy high number, especially for a team that's supposed to be a contender. But outside of that, I feel like the Timberwolves maybe have had the most aggressive turnover this season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's something that you would expect from a team near the bottom of the standings, like, I don't know, say Phoenix or Sacramento, somebody like that, where you are a team that, well, maybe not Sacramento, that's not fair to them, like Phoenix or the New York Knicks.
Yeah, Sacramento was good, bro. What the hell?
I keep forgetting that they're good this year. They just have always been bad. But like a Phoenix or Cleveland or the New York Knicks, where you are expecting them to basically treat the entire season as job interviews, and just seeing if anybody can step up and be a role player down the stretch, or even the Los Angeles Lakers with all the turnover they've had. They expected to be in the playoffs this year. They weren't. So then everybody just kind of shut it down, and so they went through a bunch of players near the end of the season just trying to see if they were worth anything. And so I think you expect that from teams that are well out of it. You don't expect it from a team like the Timberwolves, who made the playoffs last year, and then the way the season deteriorated so quickly, after that it was like, okay, we're going to do this, 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 we're going to trade Butler, we get these guys back, these guys aren't healthy. So it really was just a perfect storm of lack of health. And also the fact that the top player on the team, or one of the top players on the team, decided a few games into the season, I'm done.
Yeah, and we've talked about, I know I've talked about a lot, and we have talked about a lot as well, the Jimmy Butler stuff. I don't want to rehash that too much, but it's safe to say that not only was that a rough situation, but Tibbs was definitely not the coach to have during that situation. That said, and again, I can't stress how bad the injury bug bit this team, but there was, after the Jimmy Butler trade, there was like a 2.5-week window where you saw what this team might actually be with Covington and Sarge coming and then hitting their stride once they got on the team and got a couple games in. There was like that 2-week stretch where they really were burning through opponents of all of different shapes and sizes. And it was fantastic. It was beautiful. And then all of a sudden, the waves of injuries started. And it really helped balance the ship. It didn't look, I think, as bad as it was right off the bat. Because, first of all, it happened to a player in Robert Covington that you knew was good and you knew was going to be an impact player, but they hadn't had for a while. So when he was gone, and while it was impactful, it didn't feel maybe as impactful just because he hadn't been there long enough to really swing the season either direction. And so you're like, I guess we lost Robert Covington, but we've only had him for a couple weeks. This team should be able to win without him. And then Derrick Rose and his just phenomenal play off the bench for that few months stretch before he got injured. I really covered up a lot of woes for the Timberwolves. But injuries are just marred this team. We started Jared Bayless for like a lot of games.
It was
injured the backcourt was.
It was Jared Bayless getting a lot of run. You also saw guys like Cam Reynolds play a lot. Jared Terrell played a lot. CJ Williams played as well. Their depth really was tested because there were a lot of times you had Tyus Jones, Jeff Teague, and Derrick Rose all out at the same time. So it's like, help, get somebody in here that can play point guard. But I think it showed that there were some guys on this roster that, if needed, could have stepped in. They did step in, but I think the overall depth of this team wasn't particularly bad. It's just that all the top guys were the ones that were injured, and as a result, it's a lot harder to cover up those holes when those players aren't on the court.
I mean, Wiggins missed, what was it, 8 games this season?
Yep.
He never missed a game.
Yeah, it was just the perfect storm, the perfect injury storm. And, hopefully they don't have to go through this next season, but I think it just goes to show you, too, is that there are guys that you might not play, like, at all, Luol Deng, in the beginning of the season, that can end up coming in and actually being reliable contributors before they then get hurt. So I think it just goes to show you that as important as it is to have those top guys and that top starting lineup, you've got to have good guys behind them that can also come in and fill some very important minutes.
All right, I'm going to shoot some questions your way here, and then we can put a bow over maybe grading the team as a whole or something, giving them a rating. But I have some questions for you. First, It's kind of a two-part question. Do the Timberwolves play better without the injuries, or do they still not figure out, A, and B to this question, do they not play better anyways because if they don't have injuries, Tibbs is still the head coach?
Oh, my. Wow. I think...
Yeah, right off the top rope.
Jeepers.
With the
Mick Foley off the top of the cage. Holy cow.
I love it.
You know, that's an interesting question because we saw a lot of the problem with this team was just the defense. Obviously, you can't give up 140 points and expect to win on a nightly basis. And some of that certainly is the coaching, but there's an aspect of that too that is just the players themselves being able to make defensive plays and give that effort on that side of the ball. And it feels like we've been harping on that for decades, just trying to get this team to do that. So is some of that Tibbs' fault for not adapting to not adapting his scheme to the roster that he has? Certainly. But I wonder, I think if they would have still been around the playoffs, I still think Tibbs would have been let go this season just because of how the Jimmy Butler thing transpired. I think that was really the beginning of the end in the offseason when things started to happen between Butler and the rest of the team. I just think that that he would have been let go regardless, but I think he would have been given more of a leash had the team been healthy the entire season. But I still think he would have been shown the door before the season ended, just based off of how the Butler thing went.
Really? Oh, that's interesting, because I'm not sure if they stay healthy. I think that they win enough games with their complement of Covington and Sarge on that team that he actually stays till the end of the season. But that said, I don't know. I mean, is it enough to make the playoffs even? I mean, do they win, like, what, 8 more games maybe? Is that enough to make? Maybe they make the playoffs then, but I don't know how many more significantly they win. Like, even, I guess then even he might get fired if they win like 6 more games. It's still not enough, you know, that they got fired, that he gets fired. But I don't know. I just don't think this is a complete roster, even if it is healthy, honestly.
No, I agree. The roster has a lot of areas that need to be fixed. And I mean, it's nothing in particular against Andrew Wiggins. We know what he is at this point. But if you have any sort of a dynamic scorer or shooter around Karl Anthony Towns in that max slot, this team looks night and day difference. Like, if you would take Andrew Wiggins and swap him with even Zach LaVine, who LaVine has his limitations defensively, but he is much more dynamic of a scorer, and he can give you that range as well. I think this team looks a lot different than it does currently. But we're at where we're at, and they've got to just try to find ways to help Wiggins out and to build around those two. And hopefully Josh Okogie can be a player that can assist in helping them with a nice young core. But you got to find another option, I think, that can score dynamically around those two to try to build this thing back up.
You know, you bring up Wiggins, and we've talked about this a few times where we try and guesstimate, all right, was the Jimmy Butler trade worth it? Was it worth it for 1 year in the playoffs? And to this point, I've been saying yes, just because you have to do something. If you're the Timberwolves franchise, you have to do something. You have to try and move the needle some way. You have to try and be aggressive in some form. And while it didn't pan out, and while you probably end up with less than what you started with after this series of trades, it was the right mentality. The win now, we've got superstars, we've got a couple pieces, let's go out and get another guy, let's try and win now, let's try and get to the playoffs now, let's try and set up now. And I like the attitude around it, but now I think we have to factor in that you've killed some part of Wiggins' offense. And if you're factoring that in, that the fact that you've killed a piece of offense for a guy that you've signed up for a max contract, I'm not sure if it's worth it if you factor that in. Because, let's be honest, he was a really good mid-range player before Jimmy Butler got there. And he was not a good three-point shooter. He was not a three-point specialist. But he was really good at attacking the rim and at finding that mid-range cushion shot. And while maybe he loses that anyways, I think he definitely, a factor of Jimmy Butler being around is that guy gets killed and taken away. And it, for some reason, his confidence in those spots and going to those spots gets shot. And so if that is also, if you're factoring that into that trade and that sacrificing of that piece of Wiggins, now all of a sudden I'm not sure that this trade is worth it now headed into year three and in the second year going away from this trade. Year three of kind of looking at the long term of kind of the tips and then going into the second year of kind of getting away from Jimmy Butler. Now I'm not sure if it's worth it.
Yeah, this is going to be one that we will probably second guess for a long time because of the way that the two players that we would have likely been able to keep had we swapped out Wiggins for LaVine. I mean, maybe Markkanen still is involved in that deal, but you look at Markkanen's numbers too. He averaged 18 and 9. Shot 36% from three, 87% from the line. So you look at that as he obviously is a more dynamic scorer than Sharch. And then you've got LaVine as well. And all of a sudden you go to having Towns, Markkanen, LaVine as your core and maybe throw in Okogie as well. Suddenly you've got not only some good options, but you've also got cheap options to where you can throw another big deal out there. And you can bring somebody else in. You can bring in a power forward or a small forward that is a proven player in this league. And then all of a sudden that starting five or that four of the starting five plus the sixth man off the bench, that looks night and day different from what we currently have.
So my next question for you, going away from the season, how will you remember Derrick Rose as a Timberwolf? Because I don't think he comes back next year. How will you remember Derrick Rose as a Timberwolf? And does how you remember Derrick Rose on the Timberwolves change the legacy that Derrick Rose was setting up for himself before this year?
Boy, you must have had some time in between games to throw these questions together. Holy cow.
I told you. I was thinking about these a couple weeks ago.
Man. So Derrick Rose's legacy as a Timberwolf, I will remember him as that fearless number two option for this team. He really seemed like a guy who knew that he was going to have to take a large part of the scoring on himself after Towns because other players on the team just really didn't step up. And he did that. So I think you look at a guy who was really able to step up and fill kind of a leadership void. And he said, look at me, do what I do. And I mean, that's not something that they're going to easily be able to replace. And yeah, I think it showed that even though a guy has had multiple knee injuries, that he can kind of reinvent himself and still be a productive option in the league. So I think it's definitely a renaissance for Derrick Rose, and I would not be surprised if this leads to some sort of lucrative deal with somebody in the NBA. There's a team out there that's going to pay him starters money, and the Wolves just won't be able to match that. But I think this definitely has shown that even though you run into some tough injury circumstances, that players can always rise above it if they put their work in and they are committed to getting back on the court.
This has got to be like the most successful player remodel of both your on the court and off the court self. Just the most successful kind of retooling that a player has done. So it's got to be like top five, right?
I would agree.
I mean, go from disappearing acts in Cleveland and the New York Knicks to the sexual assault stuff going on off the court to kind of a lack of self-awareness on the court of what he kind of is as a role player and who he kind of is as a role player and as a guy coming off the bench and what that should look like and how he should play. So the way he played, and not only with a high impact on and off ball, but also a really high efficiency on the Timberwolves, and a guy who was really good for the locker room, really great locker room presence, really great team guy, a guy that somebody on the Timberwolves, everyone seemed to really love him.
Mm-hmm.
And so this rebranding has got to be a top five for an athlete.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, you just look at some of the other players who have come back from significant injuries, Gordon Hayward for one, a recent example, and he is still trying to kind of get it figured out as to what he can do and what he can't do based off of how he played pre-injury. So there is an exploratory stretch where you got to just kind of test the limits of what you're able to do with current injury constraints. I would think Rose would be one of the top metamorphosis rejuvenations that we have seen. I can't really think of any other options. I mean, Paul George had a pretty nasty leg injury, and he is playing at a high level, but not necessarily the same injury extent that Derrick Rose has had to deal with. So I think that does vault him near the top.
Well, of all those guys who listed, none of them had the off-court problem either.
Yeah, that's very true.
If you're rating these rookies for the Timberwolves, if you're going soggy, two-week-old fridge tater tots or seven-piece hungry Slim Chicken, Slim Chicken's tender meal with the Texas toast and the mac and cheese side and a big thing sweet tea, which way are you going? Where does this fall for you?
Well, I'm gonna make Josh Okogie a five piece. Not quite the seven piece. Yeah, not quite the high end top level. Still very, very impressed with what he was able to do. And I think, you know, you see his overall body of work. There's still some things that he can unlock. And we hope that he can do that going forward. So I think it's very promising with Okogie and his future. As for Keita Bates-Diop, I don't really know, because we saw some stretches from him, but we didn't really see a whole lot of consistent play. I mean, once he finally worked his way into the rotation, he was a pretty lengthy wing defender, which is always good. But I kind of want to see him given, you know, 20-ish minutes a game, and just see what he can do next year to see if he can be a reliable part of the rotation. So I'll say Bates-Diop is incomplete at this point, but with Okogie, I'm definitely going pretty impressive, but I think there's still some room before he turns into a Slim Chicken seven piece.
I mean, you're absolutely right. I don't know if there's enough to grade Keita Bates-Diop, because he is one of those guys, too, in a unique situation where they probably could have used him more. They definitely needed the depth, but they just didn't go to him for whatever reason a ton. And he's one of the few second-round guys after winning the Big Ten Player of the Year at Ohio State. anticipated to go at the end of that first round, and it dropped pretty far into the second round. And so there was, I think, a little more expectation than usual around a second round pick around Keita, and he just didn't play a ton. I thought he looked good in moments. Like when he played a decent chunk of time against Milwaukee that one game, like a month ago or whatever it was, he actually looked pretty decent. I don't know. There's not enough information to make a clear judge or a clear call on him yet either way. And as for, I will say this, looking at Josh Okogie's progression, I think is one of the, I think if you're making a case for Ryan Saunders to be the head coach for the Timberwolves this next year, he's like one of the top five things that you point to, his player development over the course of a season, of why you want to keep Saunders around if you plan on having more young guys to develop on the team in the future, and just his offensive confidence that he has, and the fact too that this, I like that the Timberwolves team never swayed him from defense, never was, I mean, he has some missed assignments and stuff, but they kept, the number one tailspin from summer league to the end of the year was to be uber aggressive on defense, and then they built his offensive confidence over the course of the season. You can see it just with both the shots he's taking, the shots he's more willing to take, and just the rate he's knocking them down. It's night and day when he starts the season with versus how he's ending the season, especially from beyond the arc. And so I really like the future for Okogie, and I think that this staff has done an uncharacteristically good job around his development.
Yeah, and so there's definitely promise going forward, but they just need to figure out a way to work these guys in and make sure that they get consistent minutes night in and night out. You can't do like 19 minutes here, 6 minutes here. It's got to be like 15, 15, 15, 15, 15. So it'll be very interesting to see, especially early on into next year, how that kind of plays out.
Definitely, especially when you're getting hopefully a few new guys in the door at least. See how that development continues, see how they continue developing these guys in year two. No matter who's the head coach, we're still going to have a lot of pieces around that are the same from last year, or at least you assume last year, this year. So see how that player development continues. I have two more questions for you, Seth. First of all, I want to ask, do you keep Saunders?
Oh man, I guess I would lean yes at this point because I don't really know other options that are going to present themselves.
Fred Hoiberg is off the table.
Huh?
Fred Hoiberg is off the table.
Yeah, Fred Hoiberg is gone, so that's not going to happen. You would expect that the Kings will retain Dave Yeager because they are. You know, they're starting to put it together. But then again, maybe they say, look, we wanted to be at a little better spot than we were, having just missed out on a playoff spot. Maybe they move on. In that case, I would be very open to the idea of Yeager, considering what he's done with Buddy Hield. But other than that, I don't really know what other options are going to present themselves. So I think at this point, you give him the year just to see how it's going to play out. And if it doesn't, well, then you go full bore into the coaching search once next season is done.
I mean, if Luke Walton is going to be free,
then I would stick with Saunders.
Really?
I don't know. Luke Walton never really did anything for me, but that might just be because it's the Warriors. I could operate that car.
I would definitely go with Luke Walton. I gotta say, give me that Luke Walton pound matchup. But again, this is nothing is finalized yet on that front, and you're right. The roster is not deep as far as coaches out there that I would really love the Timberwolves to try and at least entertain and see. It's good to get into discussions with. I don't know. And I just want them to do due diligence. That's all I want.
Yeah, and I agree. I would like the same thing to be done, because you can't really afford to have any sort of, you know, wait and see type approach with Karl Anthony Towns, because you're going to end up wasting some of the best years of his career, and then you look back and you're like, well, are we any better than we were? Well, no. And then you're like, well, what have we been doing the last 3 years? Towns is going to be a free agent soon, and he's less likely to re-up if we just continue to kind of tread water, as opposed to if we say, look, we're going to do a full tear down here and we're going to build back up with the assumption that in 3 years we'll be far better off than if we just leave things status quo.
Well, never mind even wasting his best years. You don't want to pull an Anthony Davis with the New Orleans Pelicans 3 years from now, have your superstar say, I don't want to play here anymore.
You right. Me. Yeah, exactly. We don't want that one bit.
No. And you mentioned tearing down or staying the same. That's actually where I was going to finish off, which was, I mean, we're on the same wavelength as usual. But let's say in this magical world that I'm creating for you right now, Seth, Glenn Taylor has died, and he has left you everything. You get the house, the car, the money, the swim pool, I'm sure the top shelf liquor, you right to the top, right to the top shelf liquor, and the Timberwolves. You are the owner of the Timberwolves, you're calling the shots, you're shaking hands, you're rubbing elbows with the top brass, you're making plays, you're making moves. You are, what are you doing with this team if you are in this situation? Are you, in fact, saying, okay, because there's a lot of one-year contracts on this roster. There's a lot of bad contracts, but there's also a lot of one-year contracts. So you say, okay, I'm going to totally tear this down. I'm just going to trade everything for draft picks. And teams are going to take guys like Wiggins because I'm going to offer them for a song and a couple of your picks. And I want draft picks, and I want young talent. And I want to get a ton of young talent in here and put all of that around town. And we did a good job hiring back Saunders. We did a good job developing a Kogi. We're going to get more just versatile, fast, high-energy guys who can play a couple different positions like a Kogi, and we're going to get a bunch of wing guys and a lot of stretchy guys, and we're going to fill a roster full of those guys, and we're going to develop the hell out of them, and in 2 years, we're going to be really good. We're going to be a better version of the Kings because the Kings don't have talent. Or do you say, listen, we were like this is the worst injury season ever that you could ever have. And I think that we've got some really great pieces here. And we're going to try and shake and bake. We're going to get rid of some draft picks. We have a pretty good pick, a pretty decent pick this year. We're going to try and package this pick with, like, Gordy or with, like, Tyus Jones and try and get rid of Wiggins. And we're going to make some pieces move around so we can spend a ton of money in free agency to get that second guy. And because we have that second guy now we can go and we can bolt up into the playoffs. And Towns and the second guy and a couple of young guys and some more one-year contracts. This next batch of one-year contracts, the next batch of veterans that aren't quite as old are going to be this team, and we're gonna launch into the playoffs again. What's your move?
I still go full teardown. I bring in a president of basketball operations that has a clear vision, and then I let them bring in their own people, their own general manager, their own head coach. I have them sit down with Karl Anthony Towns, and I be part of those discussions as well. Go somewhere fancy, go to Italy, I don't care, go wherever. But you tell Towns, look, this is what we're going to do. This roster's not working. We're going to get better players around you. We want your input on the direction that this team needs to go. And I let that process play out. And as an owner, I trust that the people I've put in place are going to make the right decisions. And I let that be. That is how I handle it. Jettison whatever you need to do. Any of the contracts that aren't working, get rid of them for whatever it takes and start from scratch, because Golden State, they're doing nothing but getting older. So if you can come at them with a fresh set of eyes, a fresh way to look at the roster, and you you get some talent around Carl Anthony Towns, then you're going to have a much better chance of going at them than trying to fix this Rubik's Cube and switch things around, even though the pieces don't maybe go together the way they should.
So basically, like, what? Towns is untradeable. You keep Okogie, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
You move everybody else?
Probably would keep Tyus, but those, I think, are the only three players that I'd keep on the roster.
I have soured a great deal on Tyus.
Yeah, he's had good stretches, but not overly consistent.
There is no part of him that is take over the game and really own like 10 possessions offensively.
Yeah,
with him scoring, there's no side of him that is that, which is a problem for me. If you envision him as a starting point guard, that's a problem for me.
Yeah, that's fair. That's definitely a fair assessment of his where he's at. He just hasn't really taken steps forward.
Like, is there a starting point guard in the NBA where you're uncomfortable with them taking the last shot, or you don't know if they would even take the last shot? Like, I'm trying to think of the point guards just off the top of my head around the league, the starters. I don't think there's a point guard that would shy away from a game-winning shot, and Tyus definitely is not that guy.
Yeah, I can't really think of any off the top of my head either.
I don't know. I see the merits to both of those. I honestly, I'm not sure what to do. I just know that the best route usually seems to be, if you're going to, since they have to make front office changes, bringing in the top level guy and then having him hire everybody.
Yes.
Down the chain of command, as it were, and make the front office hires and the head coach hire, and just so that all those guys are on the same page. That generally seems to work the best,
mm-hmm.
and so that's what I would do. I've got a lot of people I've talked to who want them to get the head coach figured out right away.
No.
And I don't know. I think that's got to be... So it seems like the rainfall effect where it trickles down, the trickle-down effect is probably what I was going for, but you start at the top and everything else runs off of that first decision. It seems like that is the best move in these cases.
No argument for me.
All right, Seth, so it's time. We have to decide the factors that we've talked about in this season. All that has created this season to be the disconnected jumble that it's been. Was this season a seven-piece hungry meal from Slim Chicken? Or was it the back fridge? You're not sure if that's frost or mold, tater tot bush. That disappointment. Wait, which was it?
This,
or
I think,
somewhere in between.
I think this was
the spicy chicken from Chick-fil-A. Was it a Sonic Chicago Dog? Where was this? Where was this season?
I think this was wrong order. I think you get home and you did not get what you thought you were going to get. So the question is, do you go back to the wherever you got it from? Do you go back and have them redo the order, or do you just suck it up and eat it anyway? I think that's the perfect metaphor for this Timberwolves team.
I love it. I love it so much. You just open up. What the hell is cashew chicken? Did somebody order cashew? You're like looking around. Did somebody order cashew chicken? No, I don't think anybody. Oh my
Nightmare.
Gosh, there's not fried. This is a white rice. Okay, this is somebody else's order. Oh my gosh, this is I believe this is a Kruger Enthusiasm.
Yes, I think so.
Oh my gosh, but the Timberwolves season just a big Kruger Enthusiasm episode. Gosh damn it.
I mean, yeah, I think it's pretty much a perfect metaphor for how this Timberwolves team has been. Some reoccurring bits that go through each episode. And, I mean, the overarching theme is just how bad can it get? And we just continue to be shown examples of, well, if you think it's going to be bad, top this.
I think that it's kind of like you got a meal and it was really bad. It was like a really bad sandwich or like a really bad entree, but the sauce that was on top was amazing. And there was all kinds of gristle in the chicken, and it was just like the rice was strange, the bun was funky, but the sauce. Oh, the sauce. Towns was the sauce on this season, and oh my gosh. For as bad as everything else was, for as funky as the drink was, the sauce covered up a lot while you had to muscle this thing down because you were starving, and because that's all you had.
Plug your nose, and think about the sauce.
Think about the sauce. that's actually a great motto for.
Yep.
For just a lot of things.
Life lesson. I love it.
Jeez. We're handing down all the wrong life lessons. I hope you know that.
I'm fine with it.
I also, if somebody had told me years ago that I was going to go to 4 years of college so I could compare basketball to food, I probably would have shot him. But this is also probably the best Locked On Wolves episode we've had.
Oh, hands down.
You take the good with the bad. But yeah, all right, that's where we stand. We stand with wrong order and all about the sauce. Plug your nose and think about the sauce. It's a different season. I don't know what the listener is supposed to take from that, but go forth and prosper, I guess.
Yep.
That's we're going to end it.
Yeah, that's the lesson.
Good luck with the rest of your life and with dealing with the Timberwolves offseason. That's your lesson. Have fun with it. Good luck storming the castle.
Oh, boy.
Seth, thank you for holding it down for me. We've been doing this, 50 minutes? Almost an hour?
Yeah.
So, I mean, solid content across the board. I think this is about as well as you could rate the Timberwolves season. And definitely comparing it to fast food is the perfect illustration, I think, for Timberwolves basketball, because both give you diarrhea later on.
Ooh.
And so, so that's where we're at. I will, as the rest of the league transitions into playoff basketball, we here at Locked On Wolves will probably be transitioning into draft basketball and into the draft. So get ready for all that going forward. Seth, thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you're checking out the Scoop, especially with the Masters coming up. I know Seth is going to have a lot of stuff covering the Masters. Twins baseball is back in full swing, so he'll be covering Twins baseball. Make sure you're checking that out. Yeah, go give your ears to the Scoop and give your time and attention to the Scoop every chance you get. Seth, thank you so much.
My pleasure, my man. This was a ride, but enjoyed it. And at Seth Topes, SethTOUPS is where you can find me on Twitter. Come check it out. Lots of content daily.
And, of course, I'm at C. Molesky, MOLESKY. Hit me up with your best draft pick for the Timberwolves going into this offseason. That's it for another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.